You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Okay, we're going to do, as if we're doing, because we are a second audio intro, because this is two full audio podcasts. Gotcha.
We got to banter a little. You ready to banter,
Tim? I'm ready to banter so hard.
Whoa.
Yeah. Watch yourself.
Okay. Welcome back to Switchcast season host. Season host. Let's start Let's try that again.
Run it back.
We're
more
not live anymore.
One more again.
Welcome back to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Nope. It's Tim Neely from Tim's Enthusiast Garage, sitting in while Tyler is on a much-needed and well-deserved vacation to the Bermuda Bahamas. I don't know where he actually is or what he's doing, but he's not here. Probably working.
Bermuda.
Santa Barbara. Hummus. Okay, well, somebody
else. Is he in Santa
Barbara?
Nice
place in the Caribbean as
I love Santa Barbara. Ooh, did I like it too much?
What? It was kind of creepy.
If you live in Santa Barbara, I'm waiting for the invite.
Switchcast is the automotive podcast. It's not just for car people. We do run background checks on our co-hosts, despite how it appears. Switchcast is a show where we seek to edify, educate, and entertain in no particular order. If you enjoy this podcast, help us out with the algorithms and support our co-host channel, which is...
Tim's Enthusiast Garage. I really like that placement. Do you like that placement? You like it.
I've gotten very good at product
placement. That is a nice placement, Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
Yeah, like I just wear this Sheffield watch for every episode.
Oh, another one.
And I'm checking the time on it now.
I love it. It's quarter till Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
We talked about the M5 saloon. No, not the saloon. The estate. Wagon, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Last week. And got a little flack for calling it big.
You called it a fat pig.
Yes.
We did a TikTok Instagram short.
Yeah.
And some people did not agree with your take.
Well, they said that... It's supposed to be a touring car, right? It does what it's supposed to. It's got 700 horsepower. It makes up for the weight, et cetera, et cetera. It gets around just fine. Everybody that's driven one loves it, which, no, a lot of reviewers have said it's awful. But I did a little comparison because I said, okay, if they made an E39 M5 wagon, that would have been the best car ever.
Mm.
And so people said, well... M5 has always been the heavy car compared to an M3. If you want a light car, get an M3. But E39 M5 compared to an E46 M3 was 15% heavier.
Mm.
Not a lot. The new, I don't know what the model code is, but the brand new M5, not the wagon, we're doing fair comparisons here. The new sedan M5 is 40% heavier than the new M3.
That's not good. That's not good. It is 600 pounds more than the Defender I drove here in.
Yeah. And the M3 has only gained 10% weight. As much as I make fun of the new BMWs for being heavy, the M3 has only gained 10% in weight in the last 20 years. It's not too bad.
Mm.
The M5 has gained a 40%.
That's actually that's shocking.
40% heavier for the sedan, let alone the wagon. 40% heavier than an M3.
Shocking.
So, how about them apples, detractors, critics? We love talking about auctions here. You sell on Bring a Trailer.
I do.
You don't buy on Bring a Trailer because you're too cheap. You like off-market deals where you can shrewdly negotiate people. Tim's a shrewd negotiator.
I am a shrewd negotiator.
You just do it so kindly that nobody knows.
I do like to, being to be taken kind. Advantage of. I do like to be kind. I did get some deals this week.
Yeah? What did you get a deal on?
I got an R9T racer BMW motorcycle for a deal. It's one of the most handsome BMW bikes.
Yeah? It'll look nice. You going to flip it or
I'm going to use it as a backdrop for, you know, videos and stuff like that.
On Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
On Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
There you go.
And then I got a first year Avanti, supercharged Avanti Studebaker, which is not my usual fare, but it's down to the shrewd negotiator thing. It was the price was right. And shout out Myron Vernis. Thank you, Myron Vernis, for all your what to ask and what to look for when you're investigating under the hood of a Avanti. He is
very smart. He's a regular contributor to this podcast from behind the scenes.
I'm a big Myron Vernis fan.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows everything. There's a reason I say this podcast is not for car people is because I don't have the level of knowledge like people like him. So I try not to say too much.
Encyclopedic.
Lest I get in trouble. But let's look at some auction results. The best Ferrari 456 in the world, but not really. It was a GT, not an M. But it was a manual and had 1,900 miles in a unique color. Sold last week on Bring a Trailer at a hefty premium from the one just a few weeks before. 1900 mile first year 456 GT sold for $230,000,
which is all the way full retard for those listening, because it's yesterday insanity. An M manual transmission M sold for $149,000.
But it was Tour de France blue. No, blue swatters. Sorry. Blue swatters over tan.
That's too much money.
I'm sorry. It's not tan. Beige Tradizione Connolly leather upholstery. Anyway, that was a huge bump from a 3,000 mile car that sold a few weeks before that for like $156,000, I think it was. Big bump. People be crazy. But let's talk about 1,900-mile cars. So if you want the best example of a Ferrari 456 GT, $230,000. Tim, what do you think a 1,900-mile 89 Chrysler TC by Maserati 5-speed sold for? The best one out there.
The best one out there deserves to sell for this is going to be a big number.
And it's the yellow beige.
Yeah, the nicest one on the planet color. Deserves to. It probably sold for $49.99, but it deserves to sell for $71.50.
It sold for $11,453.
They overpaid. They overpaid. That is a truly, truly terrible car.
Who got the worst deal? The $230,000 Ferrari 456 or the $11,000 Chrysler
the TC. The Chrysler TC.
Or steel.
By Maserati. I think. Double pain for, because eventually the Ferrari will be worth $256,000. Probably. Maybe. I don't know. That's a lot for a 456.
That's a lot.
You know those shocks were leaking. You know they were leaking, Doug.
Let's see. Let's talk about relists. You like. Do you like or not like no reserve auctions?
If I'm about to do a no reserve auction because I had no interest at all on my Virage, which is blowing my mind. The engineer for the car was the high bidder.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, so you sold it at a...
It did not sell. Did not meet reserve. And I sent him an offer.
Not met, and now you're listing it no reserve. And I'm going to have to... Yeah. That may work out for you.
I think so.
I've been watching a few of these relists, and it's... It might be a better strategy than just selling no reserve to start. Because you get all the people interested, yeah. Then they get a notification that's back. Oh, now I'm selling.
Because I was giving that thing away. It's like making no sense.
So here's a prime example of that. And this is not a loan example. 2007 Aston Martin Vantage 6-speed coupe. Black metallic paint with the Kestrel tan leather. So I'm sorry, Dan, our technical advisor, said it's wrong. Bring a trailer is wrong. Breaking news. What color is it? Factory Ferrari Nero Daytona. Let's see if anyone in the comments, nobody in the comments called that out. Red Fox. Well,
this
shoot.
Is the best kind of autism.
All right,
we're experiencing.
He's got a spreadsheet. So it is not. Well, it is black metallic. They just didn't say those Nero Daytona Ferrari color. Anyway, in the first auction with a reserve, it went reserve not met for $44,250. They relisted it a month later, no reserve, and it sold for $56,000, which is a big number for a 4.3 car.
That is.
It's a big number. Let's see if the first auction called out the correct color. Let's see.
My Virage.
No, nobody did?
My Virage is one of 54 and a manual transmission. So if you want rare on rare, I've got what you need, and it's coming to bring a trailer soon.
If you like our Patreon topic, nope, that is not what I wanted to say. Our Patreon topic is the worst car name. So if you want some exclusive content, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/switchcast. If you like our content and you want more of it, that's where I was going with that. Soul and Spine wants everyone to have a higher quality of life. They specialize in non-surgical options for those who have been told that they need injections or surgery. They offer state-of-the-art techniques that help over 90% of patients become pain-free in just weeks. Starting with thorough medical history and comprehensive examination, you'll work one-on-one with Dr. Hoover to meet all your treatment goals. Their mission is to unleash your body's own healing potential to avoid drugs and surgery. Visit SolonSpine.com to learn more, located in Solon, Ohio. Tim has a hot take here that he texted me. He wanted to talk about. The premise of it is essentially the question, have clout cars gone too far? And I said, well, that's going to offend a lot of people. I need you to present your case and tell me what exactly you mean by that. Have clout cars gone too far? What are clout cars?
I would broadly define clout cars as car payment vehicles, cars that are very expensive but are attractive to banks because they generally hold their value. So
all the cars that
everything at Cars
that
and Coffee
went down in the collapse of 2009.
Yes. So like but in general, generally speaking, like Huracans, R8s, stuff like that. But I would say it even gets broader.
Paint-to-sample GT3s?
Paint-to-sample GT3s. But just...
No,
that's
the super,
cool,
super
that's
cars.
Cool. That's cool, though.
I disagree with you there. It's just a color. That's literally the definition of buying clout is I paid $20,000
to
have a different color.
No, the definition of buying, I will sidestep that for a second and say, what is with all the paint-to-sample and then they paint it like Carrera GT, like
silver,
you know, GT silver. Like, how is that? You could have painted it anything. I don't get the paint to sample guys, or like paint to sample chalk.
Okay, so it goes back.
There's a bigger problem
there. It's the herd mentality. It's the same herd mentality problem of everybody buying what everybody else wants. It's the same thing with the paint to sample.
And then you get the kids that are, you know, the car spotter culture or whatever. And it's, you know, it's an Instagram full
Dan here is a recovering car spotter, so be careful.
Yeah, but Dan has taste. I mean, Dan, I follow Dan. Dan posts interesting cars, and I think that you can be, most of the clout cars bring in people that aren't inherently enthusiasts. They aren't inherently like, now I think, accusation.
So like there.
Take the Lamborghini Huracan, for example. The Lamborghini Huracan is a great car, ruined by cloud chasers. I mean, I wouldn't be caught dead in a Huracan until 10 years from now, maybe, when all the when it's not cool to own one. Because the last, you know, 6-7 years.
So you're talking about like the ones with rims, the ones with the Instagram tag on their back window?
Yeah.
Would you say it is a sin, an automotive sin, to have an Instagram tag on your car anywhere?
I wouldn't go that far, no. I mean, I think it's helpful on interesting cars. Like on the V12 Century guy, I'm okay, I'll check him out on Instagram, you know, or like Krypton Exige or whatever, Elise or whatever, you know.
Okay, so that's cool. So
it's Exige. I'm sorry.
Is the actual problem with cloud cars?
Well, the problem it's developed this whole car. There's almost like a subset of car culture. So in our area, we have a Cars and Coffee for cloud cars. And those kids that like the clout cars. And then we have a real Cars and Coffee. I mean,
so what's at the real Cars and Coffee?
Like real cars.
Cheap cars?
Expensive cars.
What's an enthusiast car?
So even at the real Cars and Coffee, like if a lone Huracan or a lone M4 GTS paint a sample or whatever shows up, typically it's like a real enthusiast owned car. Like he also has 15 other BMWs that are interesting or whatever, rather than the one guy that lives in the apartment with the M4. And it's
so
like,
you're saying it's just cars that maybe they can't afford it. Does that make somebody not an enthusiast? They buy on payments?
No. I mean, what makes them not an enthusiast is that they,
like, a Huracan is a really good car.
It is a really good car, but it's been tarnished a little bit. Would you not agree with this?
Maybe.
Yeah, it just feels like...
I'm trying to get you in trouble with the internet.
I know. I am sort of soft-shoeing this a little bit here.
Okay, so the
and
the
maybe that's the problem is I really...
That,
am, you understand what that. I'm saying, though?
Sort of.
Do you understand? Maybe I haven't articulated my premise enough.
I don't know, but I could make the opposite argument that Cars and Coffee is overrun with non-clout cars, with like the poser clout cars, like the pop tune Volkswagens and BMWs that there's a million of that their parents bought them. So it's nice. Yes, Huracans are common and the modern exotics have become accessible. So there's a lot of them, but at least they're like decent cars that people want to see that they're not just going to see at any car dealer. So I'd rather see a Cars and Coffee full of quote unquote clout cars. I'd much rather see it full of oddball random stuff that people like just because they like it, not because it's a trend.
So is a Huracan even an exotic car though anymore, or an R8 or a Aventador even? I mean, in
what define, that's a whole nother thing. What defines exotic?
I think rarity has to be play a big part of it.
Well, I think now it's just, it's a hypercar. Hypercars have taken the place of supercar exotic.
And that gets me to my second point is the performance, because now every time a new car gets introduced, it's like, well, this one's 2.2 seconds to 60. This one's 2.1 seconds to 60. Does it even matter anymore? Like,
no.
I feel like those were
a base Corvette C8 is 2.8 seconds 0 to 60.
It doesn't matter anymore.
I was sitting at a fundraiser table with a guy who had a C8, and he said, I do 2.6 seconds 0 to 60. And I literally called BS on him right there. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. When I was a kid, I did. Now I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's too much information jumbling around in my head. I'm like, you are full of crap. Mm-hmm. He showed me his app. And I was like, how is a naturally aspirated rear-wheel drive car do 2.6 seconds, 0 to 60? Whatever. You're right. But my counterpoint to you with the guy in the apartment with a Huracan is maybe that's a good thing, because exotic cars have become accessible. In the 90s, they weren't accessible. If you look at the inflation of car values relative, like to buy an E-Class Mercedes in the early 90s, you would have had to make the equivalent of like $250,000 today. They were way out of reach for the average person. It was real status just to be able to afford something like that. And now it's, in a sense, erased the status, which maybe is a good thing because it's allowed the quote unquote average Joe to be able to afford a Lamborghini or Ferrari. They're making way more of them. They are better cars and they are accessible to most people. And just the overall wealth of America is growing. The number of people who are millionaires, the overall standard of living.
Yeah, I just don't think the feeling that you get or the feeling that you would have had at the time, I almost feel like it has shifted now. And the real exotic cars, and I'm going to use the word exotic as truly
like an untouchable car,
is like a Zonda or a Huayra or a Koenigsegg.
What we call hypercars.
Yeah, like
you're
literally,
exotic.
I think
yes.
If you look at like even, I mean, you know, when I was younger or what, I mean, when's the first time you saw a Diablo in traffic? I mean, it wasn't the year the car came out.
I was an adult.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't when the car was new. It was like in the Midwest there, or even anywhere. I mean, when you'd
even
go to,
you just don't.
You just don't see them.
I didn't until I owned one, probably.
Part of me is like, you know, exotic now, you know, what's exotic? I mean, a Spyker, you know, which is old now, but that's exotic. I mean, they didn't make many. It's very bespoke. I don't know. I mean, I think there's the problem that I'm connecting and that we connected with on this subject initially is that the type of people, and I am, this is a hot take, and I am, this is going to offend some people, but the type of people that buy those cars are the type of people who want to shut down a gas station and have, you know, a bunch of kids like taking their picture. They are the type of people who want to hard park at a restaurant, you know, like so that no other car can go through. Whereas the owner of a Huayra probably isn't that person, you know. It's a clout chaser.
The rev limit Lamborghini, the Lamborghini yeah. rev battles.
You can't buy a Aventador because they all need valve jobs. I mean, because every one of them is like cold start. Whoop, 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 whoop. I mean, no oil pressure, no temperature.
I have a problem with that just because to me, I find it incredibly annoying.
But that's not an enthusiast. No enthusiast ever
would say they are. They have everybody around them with cameras. It's someone's enthusiastic about something.
I don't know. Maybe this is a conversation to have, but I just feel like that's ruining car culture.
Okay.
You know, I would say that is, I'm not saying this broadly. Like I want to hear, you know, like I want to hear a Murcielago rev. I mean, I think cars generally sound better under load. So if you have a car that makes a pretty noise, it sounds better driving up the road than it does free revving off the rev limiter. Now that's an opinion. I just stated my personal opinion about it, but I just think that culture is similar to cancer.
You heard it here.
I mean, it just is. I don't know. I
rev
mean,
rev battle Lamborghini owners
and those two cultures met.
Are cancerous to the car culture.
They just met in Gatlinburg. Those two cultures met. The 28 degrees of negative camber, like what is that stance kid?
Stance Nation.
The Stance
yep.
Nation and the Clout Chaser Aventador SVJ. Owned by someone with a car payment, just united for what is the worst car show ever in the history
yeah.
of man.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that's not, it's not a, like, it's funny to me because like no one that would have owned, I'm not saying that like you inevitably were cool if you had a 355. That is not the case, but there was something, there's less exotic cars, you know, from the bygone era. And this is, partially,
there
like
was a barrier to entry.
There's a barrier to entry.
And there's no barrier to entry anymore, especially with exotic car hacks. Thank you very much.
And some of that, I mean, you know, and some of it, like, I want to own, I own, thankfully, you own, interesting cars that we've always dreamed about. Some new, some old. You know, I have
But it took me 20 years to earn that.
Same page. And I paid
barrier to entry.
And I paid cash for every one of those cars. So now that could be like an old school mentality that I have, but And this is not a commentary on whether or not you can actually afford the thing. But if you can actually afford the thing, like, so take, for example, my Ferrari. When I start it, I let it warm up because I don't want to replace the valves, you know, because I dropped one from free revving it or, you know, cracked in a manifold or whatever. I don't know.
I mean, can get on board with you there because that goes to a philosophy of earn versus given. Mm-hmm. I think there's a stat that says 80% of millionaires are first generation millionaires because there's something to be said about starting with nothing. And when you earn it, you learn the inherent value of that thing, whether it's a dollar, whether it's a car, whatever. So, and on the flip side of that, when you win the lottery, statistics say you'll go broke because you didn't earn it. You don't know the value of that money. So I think where I can get on board with your point is when something is too easy to obtain and or you can get it on financing, your dad bought it for you or whatever, that's what's the cancer in this culture. It's not the cars themselves. It's that there's so many of these cars being produced and the horsepower and the performance and the status is so easily attainable that there is no barrier to entry. And if people are not working towards it and earning it and not just the financial aspect of it, but also like earning it in terms of like knowing about the car they're buying.
Yeah.
Like researching and knowing why they're buying it, not just because somebody on social media told them to, or because everybody else is buying it.
So the third part of this that I would say, and you can audit this and tell me if I'm right here, but so all those cars that we, so up to, you know, say the Audi R8 or the Gallardo Superleggera, like that's the end of one era and then now we're in another era. Because cars have become so like generationally ridiculously fast, you know, Christian von Koenigsegg posted a video two weeks ago now of a car that he always wanted. I know you've seen this probably, but it's a Lotus Esprit. And it's he's always wanted one. He got one and he like basically resto-modded the interior, put Regera vents on the inside of it and loves it. And there's an interview with him and Matt A. Rimac where they talk about you know, just like where cars are, because their cars now have 2,000 horsepower and,
yeah,
you know, quarter mile in 4 seconds or, you know, whatever. That's not that fast, but very ridiculous. And the contention is that before, you know, exotic cars were built to this sort of, you know, feeling, you know, when you drove a Countach, you felt a certain way. When you drove a Diablo, you felt a certain way. And when I drive an SF90, I don't feel that way. When I drive that's actually a really good example. An SF90 is not a good Ferrari. The 296 is even a better car, I would say. Even going back a generation, I think the 458 is a better car in terms of the way it feels, the way it drives. And I think that they agree with me somewhat on this premise that 500 horsepower and 2,500 pounds is a real sweet spot that we've gotten away from.
Mm-hmm.
In the chasing of crazy quarter mile time, the Veyron sort of set this, you know, impossible. Now everything beat the Veyron, then everything beat the Chiron, then everything beat the whatever. There's a real sweet spot. And you just said the F1 was even better than your friend could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good example because that's a car that's lightweight, that has
analog, manual, rear-wheel drive, naturally aspirated.
My contention is the solve for this, the fix for this, because you can't say if you had a 500 horsepower, 2,500 horsepower car, the 0-60 in a manual, it might be 3.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Who cares what it is really, but, the quarter mile is probably going to be somewhere in the high 10, low 11. So there's not going to be any brag fest there. It's going to be in, look at that piece of art. It's going to be, feel this shift, feel the way that it, you know, that the front end bites in this corner. We've somehow lost that. That was what made supercars great. That really is what made cars great. We sort of got to a peak of, you know, an Audi R8, V8, even the V10 is just such a sublime car, but it's almost too accessible. It looks like a, it looks like an Audi, you know? And is that a problem? Is that maybe...
It only does now in hindsight. When it came out, it was world ending.
I think it looks better now than it even did then. I mean, I like that car. I'm not using that as a negative necessarily. What I'm saying is that I think there's the era now, I think it should be the era of the enthusiast and hopefully the affordable enthusiast. They're talking about Christian von Koenigsegg's talking about making a car similar to that and in a price point, you know, between 100 and 200,000, which would be, you know, hilariously affordable.
So you're saying we got to go backwards to go forwards.
I am making
to recapture.
I am making that argument because I think when you look at, you know, I wanted to buy a new 911 this year, and I am chagrined to find that I will not be buying a new 911 this year because the only 911 that I really want is a 911T, and it's a manual. I want a manual. It only has 388 horsepower. And it weighs and is giant. You know, it just doesn't. The math.
388 horsepower is not an only unless you. That's a good amount of horsepower.
Well, the M2 is a far better car for half the money.
How much does it weigh?
$160,000, and it weighs well over 3,000 pounds, which is my vector for, you know, power to weight is wrong. You know, if it weighed 2,800 pounds, okay, but it doesn't.
I think it's going to be tough to get back to that point because
maybe
those cars existed in a perfect era of some airbags, some safety stuff, some EPA regulations, but not so many that we have to add another 500 pounds to the car. So I don't know if we'll ever really get back there. Lotus has been trying to, and they keep getting banned from the US.
Yeah, they did get banned.
I have counterpoints to what you said, but I don't actually agree with any of them. They're just playing devil's advocate for the sake of playing devil's advocate. So I'll just we'll leave it with that. 500 horsepower, 2,500 pounds, manual cars. If we can get back there and get away from the clout cars that are 700 horsepower, all-wheel drive, automatic, the whole thing, yeah. Cars need to be... Accessibility isn't the problem.
Accessibility is a huge problem.
Yeah.
Interactiveness, I mean, is a huge problem. I drove that 996 GT3 RS, and I could not believe how much I liked that car. I always liked the 996 is a nice form factor because it's like almost 993 small. It's not huge. It's a little bit of a bigger car. It's a little longer wheelbase, but it's like hilariously small compared to a 992. I mean, it feels like it is smaller than a Cayman, a modern GT4. So it's like, you know, Porsche, I feel like, well, what should Porsche make for enthusiasts? I mean, the answer is the 996 GT3 RS, just not $475,000.
I know what the answer is. I know what it is. And some manufacturers are already doing this. It's the Singer formula.
Yeah.
They can't make new cars without conforming to all the safety regulations. Mm-hmm. So Porsche and other manufacturers need to go back, Lotus maybe, and resto-mod their old cars.
I think I hope they don't. One thing where Singer gets a little stuck is because they end up being $1 million is they let all these clout chasers say, well, can I get rhinestones on the interior?
Analog Elise. Have you heard of that? The Elise S1s that a company in the UK is doing this. Not the Singer. I shouldn't say the Singer treatment, but they're updating everything. They're improving everything and modernizing what needs to be done. They're taking a really great driver's car and bringing it up to today's standards.
I do
and the
like
price
that.
Points around like 100K.
I love that.
There's your answer.
100 to 200K, I think, is the answer. Well, 100, that's it. Ideally 100K.
That'll fix the car community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots and lots of resto mods.
And now we pray.
All right. Now going to Shrewd Negotiator, which is people trying really hard, often too hard. Speaking of praying, we've got a 2005 Bentley Continental Coupe for sale. Owner, pastor's wife, very seldom driven, need to sail to be driven and enjoyed with the ambiance of luxury and speed with pure admiration of everyone you encounter. All right. Well, I don't know why a pastor's wife is driving a Bentley. That's
a whole other.
And cares about the admiration of everyone she encounters.
That's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other conversation. I don't know why any of that is a selling point on a Bentley. I'd rather know about the maintenance, but Apparently, it's more about the ambiance of luxury and speed.
It definitely needs airbags. The suspension's definitely shot, and it's never had...
And the tires are 15 years old.
Every vacuum line on that W12 is bad, I guarantee it.
Everyone. 100%. Only driven to church on Sundays 100%. And Wednesday nights for Bible study.
It's exactly what you want to avoid.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Americans are drowning in auto loan delinquencies, and a report says Congress needs to fix it. This is courtesy of usatoday.com. Now,
that's crazy.
There is a very real problem. And according to this article, the record number of auto loan defaults is a canary in the coal mine for large scale economic problems, warns the Consumer Federation of America. Now, that I agree with, and we have purposefully not touched on this auto loan issue yet. The last couple of years, there have been a number of social media videos going around repo lots saying, oh man, look at all these repos, they're on the rise. And I'm like, well, you're not comparing it to anything. You're literally just walking around a lot saying all these cars are repos, unless you have a baseline to say this is more than last week or less than last week, more than some other period of time. It's irrelevant data.
Right.
And most of the data that we've been seeing has essentially been auto loan defaults are back almost to pre-COVID levels, or now they are back to 2019 levels, which there was already a debt problem in the U.S. There is a debt problem. We get that. But looking at the numbers, there was nothing concerning. It was just, okay, we are getting back to normal, because 2000 to 2022 was abnormal economics. The government printed money at record rates. Inflation was at levels not seen since the 1920s, mm-hmm. I think. And we're basically just getting back to normal. Back to normal levels of debt and normal levels of people not paying their bills. Well, it seems like the stats are now telling us that we're getting back to abnormal levels, and the numbers are more mirroring the pre-2008 numbers of defaults, which is very concerning.
Was it you that sent me the chart? It was way worse than that. Was it you that sent me that?
Maybe.
Yeah, it was really bad.
I sent you some things. It was really how bad is it?
It's really bad. And the funny thing, I just want to say, you know, Congress fixing it. It's just like 2008.
Congress can't fix
that. Yeah, here's who can fix it. You know, in 2008, it was these guys that were like, everybody saw The Big Short or whatever that movie was.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that what it was called? The Big Short, am I right?
Can't short car loans, though.
Car loans, though, like, I can get you approved. Should you get me approved? If I've got a debt to income. These people should not, you watch those TikToks and you see those ones where they're going around to every person and what's your car payment? They do it a lot in car dealers.
Yeah. The average new payment is over $1,000.
It's like $1,500, $1,275.
20% of new car payers are paying more than $1,000. The average new car payment, I believe, is around $800. Okay, so according to this article, CFA sent the report to members of Congress who, for the record, are record debt accumulators, so they can't fix this problem, calling for an end to, quote, exploitative practices, including interest rate kickbacks where dealers and lenders, quote, conspire to secretly inflate interest rates and share the profits gleaned from the consumer's overpayment, end quote. I had one opinion before I started reading this article, but the more I read it, the more I get angry at just blaming banks and car dealers.
Yeah, it's a lack of personal responsibility.
There's no secrecy. Interest rates are readily available to the general public. And if you don't like the interest rate that the dealer offers you, you can go to PenFed or go anywhere to your credit union. Like, that's an open competitive market. And they also blame the growing cost to buy and maintain a car, as this article says, exacerbated by inflation and tariffs, are leading to rising auto loan defaults and repossessions. No, you know what's leading to it is people not paying their bills. Nobody needed to buy a new car at a crazy inflated rate in 21 and 22. There were used cars available on the market.
Good used cars.
Yeah.
You can still get a really nice used car for 20 grand.
You can get a really nice used car for 8 grand.
I mean, you can get a really nice used car for 6 grand.
You can get one that works for 4.
You can get a
Dan
car.
Dan Doucette sold his perfectly good Honda Accord for what, $2,000? Less than that, he says. Ran fine, and it will continue to run fine. So this is consumer behavior. Now, fully admit that in the 2008 recession, there were banks and mortgage loan officers taking advantage of people, telling them all sorts of things, hiding things in the contracts. I get that. That was, you know, it wasn't just the consumer's problem, because there is a, I guess, more responsibility on the part of the people who know what they're doing to be responsible versus the consumer.
This feels like a responsibility problem. It really does.
But it's both and. People are signing loans. People are buying ridiculous cars and getting themselves into this trouble. The interesting thing is, there's two pieces of information that I think is interesting related to this, the mortgage loan crisis. So Westlake Financial came by last week to solicit us, as, you know, they wanted to do indirect lending for us. And I go, wait a minute, you guys are like a subprime lender. We don't do that. It's, oh, no. We're moving into the 600 plus credit score, like the good loans. We want to give good loans now. It's like, really? Because that is not your reputation at all. No, we're moving away from that demographic and we're moving into prime loans. It's like, okay, sure, fine, whatever. That seems smart, right? You want to diversify. However, on the flip side of that, Wells Fargo is going the complete opposite direction, now offering loans starting at 540, well, starting at 500 credit score, but 540 and above can get a loan to value up to 150%. 150% Wells Fargo will loan you if you have a 540.
Now, but is that not predatory? That's predatory lending.
If you have a 500 to 539 credit score, they'll go up to 110% of loan to value.
That's disturbing.
Very disturbing. Let's unpack this a little bit. So those are the facts. These are the, I'm a car dealer, not an economic expert, but I know a few things. Quoting my critics here with the, I'm not an economic expert, I should stay in my lane. However,
stay in your lane.
So dog. What was one of the big issues that caused the financial meltdown of 2008? This is a layup question.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was the loan packaging.
Yeah.
Right. It was not just the bad loans. Was that the banks were taking the loans. You watched The Big Short.
I did. What was that called, though? There's a name for
credit default swaps.
Credit default swaps.
So they'd package all these AAA rated with the, you know, subprime loans and sell them as good stuff. But then they ran out of good loans, so they just put more bad ones in there and put enough in there that it was, you know, a good mix, and they were getting the rating from the SEC or whatever, and reselling them. So I'm looking at this going, okay, Wells Fargo has probably a really good portfolio of good loans. Well, they can take on these risky loans, super high profit if the people pay, and then package them up with their good loans, just like they did with mortgages, and then sell them off and make a bunch of money. Because why else would a well-established bank, and Wells Fargo is not the only one doing this, why else would a well-established bank go, let's see, auto loan delinquencies are at an like all-time high, essentially. Let's get into this business when it's terrible.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's disturbing.
Unless,
according to the chart you sent me, it is at an all-time high.
Unless you can make a bunch of money by kicking the can down the road.
That makes me sad.
Passing it off to somebody else. And maybe Westlake wants to do the opposite, yeah. Not just diversification, but it's like, well, we need to sell off our portfolio. We need some good loans in here so we can package our crap, all of our subprime junk.
That's horrifying.
And put it in and sell it off.
So Doug's not a financial expert, but he's saying there's like 18 months before the collapse.
Listen, there's been a lot of people calling for the collapse on TikTok for a long time, but it's with data that wasn't real data. It was just, look at all these repos.
Yeah.
I'm thinking this is not a good sign. This is not a good sign. Now, this is mostly subprime stuff, but it's going to have a trickle up effect on everybody.
You know, the problem with the government is, you know, this is about the time where you don't have a bad, you know, loan. You don't have a bad loan. You don't have a bad loan. I don't have a bad loan. We all have good credit.
I don't have a loan.
We don't. Yeah, period. Here's the problem.
I don't have credit.
Here's
either.
The problem is all of these people with the really bad situation are going to get bailed out by Congress. And they're going to say, oh, you know what? Just we'll pay off your car. And
that's part of the reason we got into this in the first place is during COVID, everybody got checks. Everybody got bailed out in advance. They hadn't even defaulted on anything yet. They just started getting checks.
So accurate. Yeah.
And then it's not the people that get bailed out. It's all the companies that don't need a bailout. Look at how many companies got PPP that didn't need it.
It's painful.
You're right. You're right. There's going to be a massive government bailout.
It's painful, and it's just going to be another one of those things that you can already, I mean, like, honestly, I don't really even have a comment here because that's literally what is going to happen, and we're going to pay for it, and we're not going to win. But we're not going to win, but we're going to pay for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, surprise. Which is fine.
It's not fine, but it is what it is. Okay, well, yes. Brings us to our props and flops of the week, brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy and sell cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing when available, likely $900 off. And if you know why, we'll throw in a free t-shirt. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our indoor showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. We probably don't offer 150% loan to value loans to people with 500 credit scores, just as an FYI.
That should not be a thing. Think about what you just said.
Going back a little bit, the whole conspiracy thing of dealers, like, the predatory lending, yeah. The conspiracy to mark up rates, to secretly mark up rates. There's no secrecy about it. There is a required disclosure where you have to put on a piece of paper. This is the rate you're paying. This is the effective rate with fees. This is the total amount of interest you're paying during this loan. Like, all that stuff is regulated by the FTC. And
I've had two car loans in my life. One was 0% and the other one was 1.8%. That's when you get a car loan. I mean, not 31% and, oh gosh.
It's bad business for sure.
Yeah, it hurts my face.
It's, maybe predatory, but it's not illegal. It's not conspiracy.
I think what they're talking about is you go to get a car, say even Switch cars. You go to get the, you see a 996 or a 997, 991 that you've got, and hey, that's a good price. It's a great color combo. Let me see. And you get them with whoever your loan provider is. I'm sure you work with someone. And they can do whatever. Right now, probably 6.5% or something. Let's say 8%.
Yeah.
And because you brought that bank, that thing, you get a percentage point or something.
Sure. Like 1%.
And if that is really offending you, that's how the car industry works. That's how Doug continues to pay for the things he wants to, you know, groceries or whatever. But that's not predatory.
And honestly,
where it's predatory is you go to get a Hellcat.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a 2023 Hellcat.
Tim? Why'd you pick that one for this example?
I don't know. But say you go to get a 2023 Hellcat and you have a 500 credit score and you show up and they're like, and you just want the 2023 Hellcat. And you say, well, what can you get me? Well, we can get you 26%.
No, they don't say that. We can get you at $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
How does that payment work for you? That's it. That
Is that predatory? Yes. But you have to sign the paperwork. Just like when you go to the new car dealer and they say you have to get the thing where they put air in the tires and
nitrogen,
that crap. Stupid. You don't have to pay
Simonized.
You don't have to pay for any of that. I hate to tell you. So if you're going to buy a new car, you say, no, I'm not buying that. I'm paying whatever you agreed to and the sales tax in your area and a reasonable dealer doc fee of $500 or whatever, and you're out.
Yeah.
And honestly,
$265.
That's a good deal. And you know is pay cash. That's the other tip.
Well, now you're speaking like an elitist, so.
And if you don't pay cash, whatever prime is, pay close to prime. So whatever, 8%, 7%,
6%. Listen, people financing Hellcats don't know what prime means.
Mm. Yeah, I shouldn't use that. Please don't come at me.
Okay. Well, speaking of 996s, that transitions nicely to our pick of the week. Is a 99 Porsche 911 Carrera Coupe 6-speed manual in palladium metallic, which is really grandma gold, but it has the factory painted to match twist wheels and painted hardback sport seats, all in palladium metallic, among other really cool options. So that is available on switchcars.com. And our props and flops of the week are, let's see, flop of the week, Pit Race, which used to be Beaver Run, has been sold to allegedly build a data center. Why? I don't know. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
It's horrible.
Like I would think there's plenty of real estate around there. I don't know why they have to sell a really fantastic facility that they like spent all this money to redo and expand.
So sad. It's
awful.
It sucks. Literally awful. And let me just say that if you live in the Midwest and there's a data center going in next to you, did you know that if the nuclear reactor is under so many megawatts, it does not need to be disclosed to the neighbors? Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
That these data centers are, if they're not powered by V16 uncatalyzed diesel engines as their backup power, they are allowed to use nuclear reactors, on-site nuclear reactors under X amount of, and they don't have to get special disclosure. I recently found out that one of the data centers close to me has had it operating now for a little bit of time, a nuclear reactor.
But they are very safe.
It's super safe. We love nuclear.
It is. It really is. Safe. Apart from catastrophic failures.
Everybody here is like, hey, I love nuclear power. Why are you so scared?
Prop of the week. Because that is a really bad flop. Usually we have fun with them. Like, this is stupid. But this really sucks. That is a local track to us.
Great track.
I've been driving there for, I don't know, since 2005, six, something. Yeah.
It's sad.
Oh, it sucks. Our prop of the week, maybe premature, that we'll know in hindsight, but our very own Tyler Sanders, who's been chasing a 996 GT3, has made an offer on one that has been accepted with some contingencies. So we might come back next week with Tyler being an owner of a 996 GT3. So big props to him.
So awesome.
For getting at least to the point where he put forth an offer and it was accepted. That's all it needs. Even if it falls apart, he committed. He committed, and we love Tyler. So we'll get the full story in a couple weeks, and so will you. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.